Hello and welcome to Dead Man's Chest, a new podcast discussing all things film and television. Before we get into today's episode, this podcast was originally supposed to be commenting on recent films, recent TV shows and things like that. But unfortunately, at the time of recording, the whole world has been affected by this coronavirus, the COVID-19. And it's really affected everything, hasn't it?
It has, yeah.
It's affected travel, it's affected music concerts.
Holidays,
going to the shop, meeting up with friends, film releases, TV shows being made. And social isolation at the moment is a common thing, not just here where we are, but everywhere. So we thought we'd just fill you in on some more ideas. We imagine that you've been hammering streaming services and your own film collection is pretty hard by now. So we thought we'd just give you some suggestions with the things we've been watching, give you some more ideas in these weird days. I'm joined today by Becky.
Hi.
Becky is a Disney queen.
I am.
And a destroyer of box sets.
I am the destroyer of box sets.
What's your record for a box set?
A day. Yeah.
What was that?
Vanity Fair.
How many episodes?
Six episodes.
That's not a lot.
No.
If you could do a season of 24 in a day,
Well, it'd be like one every hour.
Yeah.
I haven't done that yet, but no. I did have a go at season 4 Game of Thrones tonight a while ago.
You did. You smashed, was it 8 episodes?
Yeah.
In one sitting?
No, I actually had watched 3 of them.
Earlier in the day?
Earlier on in the week. And right. Then I finished the rest of them at like 2 o'clock in the morning. Yes. And I had to get off for work the next day. It was not good.
Very grumpy that day.
I was very grumpy that day.
Incredibly grumpy that day. So we've each got a couple of suggestions, haven't we, for this episode?
We do.
And I said before you were the Disney queen, and your first suggestion is a Disney film.
It is.
Bring us in.
It's the Dumbo live action, which was released last year.
Yeah.
In 2019. It was directed by Tim Burton. Yep. Who also directed the first live-action Alice in Wonderland.
He did.
Yeah. And obviously, to accompany Burton, yep. Danny Elfman did the music.
Did the score, yeah. So, where there's one, there's always the other.
Exactly. The budget was $170 million.
Disney can afford it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And the gross at the box office was $353.30 million. Worldwide, so
it's not amazing.
No, it's not really.
It's a fair haul, but when you think now that the Marvel films, which are also now owned by Disney, I mean, more often than not, they are pulling in a billion.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's relatively
on the low side, really.
I mean, it's. They've probably got their money back and some, which is the minimum a studio is going to want.
Yeah.
So, this is one of the live-action remakes.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Now, there's been a few of them, hasn't there?
There has. So this is the eighth live-action film in its current run.
Yeah.
And I think there's 13 in total.
Yeah, because this current run, really, that... As we understand these live actions, this started with...
Alice in Wonderland,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because they had a couple of goes, didn't they, before this?
They did. They had 101 Dalmatians, which starred Glenn Close.
Yeah.
Glenn Close. And I can't remember the other one.
They did the sequel as well, which was 102 Dalmatians. Really original thinking there.
Yeah, definitely. So, but you've got some big hitters in here, in the cast.
Cast-wise.
You've got Colin Farrell.
Yep.
Michael Keaton.
Yep.
Eva Green and Danny DeVito.
Okay, so now I remember I watched this with you.
Yeah.
And there is a nice little reunion here, isn't there?
There is.
which harks back to 1992,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
So you have...
Batman Returns,
yeah. Yeah. With, well, Burton directed, Elfman predictably did the score.
And you've got DeVito and Keaton. And
DeVito and Keaton as well. No Michelle Pfeiffer to make up the...
No.
The Pfeiffer. and no Catwoman jokes in this film.
No, there isn't,
they,
no.
They say they've missed an opportunity here.
I think so.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, see, they need to... When they have these ideas, they need to call us and say, look, here's the plan.
Yeah.
Is there anything we could do to make it better? And we'll tell them.
Exactly. We'll just let them know. We can be consultants.
This is it. I mean, it's only a matter of time before we get brought out by Disney, so...
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway.
there is some original music in the film, which is fantastic. Keeps the, you know, the original in there.
Yeah.
They're all instrumental versions of them. So the first one is Casey Jr. So that's with the train at the beginning.
Okay.
That's when I See an Elephant Fly, Pink Elephants on Parade, which is all done with the bubbles.
Yes.
Which is very, gives it a bit of a nod to that.
It's still quite psychedelic though, isn't it?
It is, a little bit psychedelic. It always freaks me out.
Yeah.
Even in the original and in this, because it always has done. You've got, and also the signature one, Baby Mine, which always gets me every time.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned the original there.
Mm.
How similar or different is it to...
It runs a different storyline.
Yeah.
But you've still got that message there of believing in yourself or believe in, you know, that things can be better. So it kind of really... harks home for during this COVID-19 crisis.
True.
You know, that it is going to get better.
So is
there is going to be a light at the end of that tunnel.
So it is the same message, just a different way of getting it across.
Definitely. And I mean, the film, the original was done in 1941, which is 78 years ago.
So that's where, I'm so pleased you got me there. Now you said this was like the 8th.
Yeah.
Live action.
Yeah.
Maybe even more. Now, I guess the big question is, do we need these live action remakes?
I think we do. It's nice to see them remade. And it's still got the original Disney magic in them.
It has.
Whether you like them or you dislike them to the original, I think it brings them up to date as well.
Yeah.
So they're not always going to be so dated. But saying that, when you do watch a Disney film, to me, they're not dated at all.
That's the other thing. Now, when did you say the original was?
1941, 78 years ago.
So, I mean, these films have really, really stood the test of time.
Of course they have.
Because, I mean, if you took any 5 or 6 year old now, they would know who Dumbo is.
Oh yes, definitely.
Even though that film predates them by 70 years more.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a tricky one. It does look as if Disney are, in a way, just money grabbing.
I don't think they are. I think it's nice to see them remade and in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, to have it all live action or CGI, it's like The Lion King and, you know, Christopher Robin, that's based on the Winnie the Pooh stories.
Yeah.
You know, Jungle Book, Beauty and the Beast. It just gives another set of magic that Disney have in their armoury.
I mean, and I'll say, I mean, I've seen... I guess most of them. I don't think I've seen the Alice in Wonderland. I'm not sure if I have.
I've seen the first one. I haven't really seen the second one as much.
They all have that Disney ingredient in them.
Of course they do.
They just look... the one I was really surprised with, I think, was Aladdin.
Mm.
Because, I mean, there's the whole Robin Williams aspect of the original, and... when it was announced Disney were going to do it, it was kind of like, should you be touching that?
Will Smith gives it his own take on
exactly.
it. So, in a way, you're not really comparing him to Robin, because Robin did it in his way, and Will's done it in his way.
Yeah.
And I think he should be commended for that.
Oh, absolutely.
He's not taking anything from it.
Yeah.
From the original performance.
yeah, I think if Will Smith had gone into that film and said, or with the attitude, I'm going to try and be Robin Williams,
mm-hmm.
I think it would have been horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he's, as far as I can see, he's gone into it, no, we're going to do this, we're going to have fun with it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to try to be him or him.
The genie is
him.
All about fun. And, yeah. You know, so the only way you can do it is to have fun with it.
Yeah.
You've got to.
The other thing I will say, excuse the motorbikes going past, the other thing I will say about these, we'll call them live actions, but you know, it's not always the case, they have got that secret thing that only, well, Disney do it better than anyone, that some of them are very definitely child orientated and some of them are very definitely adult orientated, but both can watch them and both can enjoy them, but
yeah, you, and then you take out what you want from it.
Yeah, you get, yeah, you know, you have your experience of a film and the child will have their experience of the film. I must admit I did enjoy Dumbo. I couldn't tell you how long it's been since I saw the original. So comparisons between that and in the storyline, I'm not sure I could really point out any major differences, but I did really like what they'd done. And Disney have got this other thing where they immediately make you care about the centre character.
Of course.
And
I mean,
with that,
Dumbo in this remake is so cute. His eyes get you every single time. And, you know, the way they've, you know, done it, when he gets taken away from his mum, and it's just really sad. And I cry.
Yeah, I mean, just to add, Becky has cried in
many a Disney film.
Most things. Brother Bear was a particularly bad one, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast, every time.
Every time.
Oh, blimey.
You've lost count how many times I've cried during a Disney film.
Point blank refused to watch it Up.
Yeah. Yeah, and Coco.
And Coco. we know those are Pixar films, and they're the other example of how Disney make films for kids and films for adults.
Of course. I mean, some of the Pixar films are quite dark in some respects. But some of them are really, like, fun.
Yeah, others are just pure children's films.
Definitely.
Like The Good Dinosaur and Cars and Monsters, Inc.
And Toy Story.
Toy Story,
I would say it was on the edge a little bit.
I mean,
because
Toy Story 4.
Oh, don't even talk about Toy Story 4.
Caught us by surprise, didn't it?
It did, very much so.
And then, like we said, Up is very definitely adult. Even The Incredibles, I'd say, is an adult.
I would say even Inside Out.
Inside Out has got very adult themes.
Yeah.
Or becoming an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a coming-of-age film, really.
Yeah, it is. So it's sort of like a teenager type / adult type film.
And then Coco, which was another experience.
It was indeed. But we'll talk about that later on.
We will.
In another episode.
Maybe we'll cover it. A couple of Pixar films. So the big question, would you recommend Dumbo?
Of course I would. Yeah. Of course I would. Going with an open mind, because some people are wanting to watch it and some people haven't liked it.
Yeah. Because I know these, every time one of these, and we'll call it again, a live action Disney film comes out, there's always that little bit of heat, there's always that little bit of negativity towards it. But I think a lot of it's quite unjust.
Yeah, of course it is.
If you look at other franchises and you think, well, every 10 years or so, we get a new James Bond. And we get a new Batman. And we get a new Superman. And we get, you know, countless other characters are recycled, rehashed and re-released.
Yeah.
So why can't we have a new Simba? A new Dumbo, a new genie.
Of course.
Do you know what I mean?
I think it just gives it a sort of that modern, up-to-date...
Exactly.
...wash on it, really.
Or just a different take.
Yeah,
and
I think sometimes it's nice to see a different take on an original or a classic.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, my favourite of like the Disney classics was always probably being The Lion King.
Mm.
Excuse me. And I could probably run that film in my head and not miss a minute of it.
Mm.
I've seen it so many times.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see the new one. Yes, the animation was a bit dodgy when they were smiling and whatever, but...
Does it? I don't think it actually matters. You go and watch the film for the film.
Yeah.
You don't watch it to be pointing out all the faults and the... No, you know.
And really, we're not sort of... I'm not sort of pointing out a fault as such. I'm just... Disney's animation for that film was so on point that it highlighted a problem that I don't think they thought they'd ever have.
Definitely.
You know, but they got the movements of a cat's face so accurate, and that's all credit to them.
Yeah,
their definitely. Animation team.
Yeah, I mean, I'd recommend any Disney film, really.
I don't think
I don't think it's a bad one.
Though. I think your mission is to find one you don't like. Yeah, isn't it, in life?
Yeah, it is, and I've got a couple left of the Disney classics to watch.
Yeah,
Like Princess and the Frog and The Emperor's New Groove. And then, you know, maybe one of them I might not like, I probably will.
Yeah. But if you notice, Disney films do have a formula, don't they?
They do.
And they stick to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so my first choice today is probably about as far away from a Disney film as you can humanly get.
Oh, definitely.
And it is the ultimate social isolation film as well, so quite topical.
It is quite topical.
It's exactly what we're going through at the moment in the world, apart from the snow. We haven't got any of that.
Probably on its way.
It's almost certainly, yeah. We're only a couple of days into April. There's plenty of time for it to mess us up yet. We wake up next week and there's aliens or something.
Yeah.
I don't think this year is finished with us for quite a while yet. 1980, so I'm going back a little while.
Okay, well before I was born.
And me. The Shining.
Wow. Yes, the film I don't want to see.
Absolute legendary, for all the right reasons, and some wrong ones as well. I didn't know actually how old this bloody film was. What's impressive is it's 40 years old, and if you think of what has come out since in that 40-year period, it is still at the top or near the top of all-time horror films.
Yeah.
And you've got to give credit to Stanley Kubrick for that.
What attracts you to this film?
I think it's a very small cast, and that sometimes does limit a director in what he can do. The more a director, I think, has got to work with, the more he can create.
Yeah, but...
This is a film that is centred really around three people, and he creates such a story. Yeah, he pushes each actor to their absolute limits.
Yeah.
This was a time when directors could be absolute psychopaths, and Kubrick was as psychotic as they came.
Yeah.
There's one scene... I won't go too far into the plot, because if you're listening to a film podcast, you've probably seen The Shining. But there's a scene where Jack Nicholson's character is backing Shelley Duvall's character up a staircase. And apparently it took weeks before Kubrick was happy with... And that's what they were doing all day.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got to get the right shot, you know.
Kubrick had an idea, and until he had got that on camera, on tape, he wasn't going to rest.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quite often to the detriment of his cast's health, really. The story is that Shelley Duvall, didn't get along with Kubrick at all. And... to the point where she was having health problems with the stress.
Really?
She was not sleeping, her hair was falling out.
Oh my God.
But she freely admits in an interview after the film that he pushed her to be better than she could ever imagine.
Well, I mean, so obviously a director wants the best performance from their actors. Sometimes pushing them to their absolute limits.
Yeah.
And to get that perfect performance.
Yes.
Like you said, you know, she got health problems and things like that. I mean, that's not great, but
it's not.
If that's pushing someone's limit to an actor's limit,
yeah,
to give them that best performance of a lifetime, then, you know, I think it does everything for the character then.
It's a fine line, and I think Kubrick often blurred that line into what is pushing someone to their limit and what is going past that line. And the other comparison when you talk about psychotic directors would be Billy Friedkin, who directed The Exorcist, and apparently he was horrendous. And there's cast members from The Exorcist that had permanent injuries after that film because of what he had done or what he had ordered to be done. So I think there's a very fine line, and Kubrick and Friedkin were masters at blurring it. Jack Nicholson is awesome playing Jack Nicholson. If you haven't noticed, Jack Nicholson just plays the same character.
Yeah.
I don't think he's ever played a role in his life.
I think he just plays himself.
I think he just turns up on set, they fill him full of cocaine, and just let him go. Jack, you just do you, it'll be fine, we'll edit it, it's all good.
Yeah.
He was the first choice for this, but there were some interesting choices for, well, interesting names that were cooked up as well.
Mm-hmm.
Robert De Niro, Harrison Ford, which would have been interesting.
Very interesting.
And the last one, which would have been really interesting, and I'd have paid good money to see this, was Robin Williams.
Really? Wow.
So, yeah, in an alternate universe somewhere, there's a version of The Shining with Robin Williams as Jack Torrance, chopping through a door, probably sprouting a line from Mork and Mindy.
Yes, I love Mork and Mindy.
It would have been quite a film. It reminds me of a Batman film that almost happened, where Michael Jackson wanted to be, I think, the Riddler.
Okay.
Which would have been weird. And Daniel Day-Lewis was Batman. And all kinds of, and you think, please let me, just never mind the Snyder Cut, please tell me somebody got these.
Yeah, so would you say this film was like an entry-level horror? If somebody had never seen any horrors before in their lives and they wanted to see one film, what would it be?
If somebody had never seen a horror film, you would want to show them the best.
Mm.
And depending on opinions, I mean, if you take the all-time probably top five, so in any order, I'm not saying that one is better than the other, but in any order, you'd have The Exorcist, you'd have The Omen, you'd have The Shining, you'd have Psycho, and I'd be tempted to say Nightmare on Elm Street is up there as well.
Mm.
So
any one of those five.
If you wanted to show just how good horror can be, then one of those five
would be it.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you which one I think is the best.
No. Well, everybody has their own opinions on that.
So. Interestingly, it had a sequel last year, which was Doctor Sleep.
Yeah.
Starring Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, Ewan McGregor, if anybody knows that.
Yeah. now, this was 1980. Closely following this film would have been films like Halloween, which I think came out at the end of the 70s, now I think about it. Nightmare on Elm Street was definitely out in early 80s, I think. Friday the 13th. And this film must have really hacked studio owners off, because the other three, those big slasher films, so Halloween and Nightmare on Elm Street, etc., they all had a dozen sequels, and they just got worse and worse and worse.
Mm.
The Shining, which was absolutely inch perfect, must have been a nightmare for the accountants at the time, because there's nothing they can do with it.
No.
It can't.
But why would, in a way, would it, it's best to leave on a best thing.
It is.
Rather than create so many horrible films afterwards.
Of course it is. And but accountants don't always see that.
No, I know.
You know, they see a film that has made, you know, I mean, take last year, you had The Joker, which we both enjoyed. You know, and it's much the same story. It's perfect.
Mm.
It's made $1 billion. It's absolutely perfect. It's won loads of awards. Leave it alone.
Yeah, because exactly.
Anything you do now,
it's going to be,
it's just going to cheapen it.
Yeah.
Sadly, I think accountants are, they're primarily, they're money men.
Of course
and
they
then
are.
They're film men, secondly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, to answer your question, yes, I would recommend this film. And then I'd have to recommend, I don't know, a couple of hours at least of you watching a Disney film.
Yes, or many Disney films. Many Disney films afterwards. Yes, like the Conjuring instance.
Just to bring you up to date on that story. Me and Becky watched The Conjuring a couple of years ago now.
Yeah.
Becky even muttered the lines,
this is a bit slow.
It's a bit slow, it's a bit boring. And then the game of hide and clap started. You'll have to excuse the text messages as well going off in the background. So hide and clap started and... Well, you had a very restless night, didn't you? We had to watch
Dirty Dancing to calm me down, or to make me sleep, because we had a wedding the next day.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you've never said that about any other film.
No,
since,
well, I haven't really watched any. I mean, I did go and see The Nun with you, but that was I mainly watched it from the back of a cushion.
You did. And that, I guess The Nun, I mean, that is part of the Conjuring sort of universe now. And I guess the Conjuring films are probably the best out there.
Mm.
I mean, The Nun was a bit... Ugh. And the first Annabelle wasn't great either. But they have had some really, really solid entries. So, yeah, I think The Conjuring's probably as good as it gets at the moment. So, we'll leave the horror films alone.
Yes,
because you're getting freaked out just talking about it.
Freaked out, yeah.
So, what's your second choice?
My second choice today is a film called Judy.
Okay.
Now, this is based on the last year of Judy Garland's life.
Judy Garland of...
Wizard of Oz fame.
Yep.
It does follow her career in the last year of her life, 1968, when she tries to relaunch her career.
Because she's kind of, at this point, she's kind of rock bottom. She's probably even below rock bottom.
She is rock bottom, below rock bottom, because she's bankrupt. Her alcohol and drug addictions are getting a little bit out of control. But she goes to Britain and they host a series called Talk of the Town.
Yeah, because it's kind of her last chance, isn't it?
It is. It's her last chance at reclaiming her status as an idol.
Because at this point, she's got a reputation for being an absolute pain in the arse.
Yeah, basically. Unreliable, doesn't show up.
When she does show up, it's barely worth her being there.
Exactly. So, you know, this is her last chance to reclaim her idol status, because she's such a big talent. Yeah. Now, I'm not a big fan of Renée Zellweger.
No.
But I thought she was excellent in this film, because she just captured everything that Judy was, even her movements, down to the pout, down to the way she chucked the lead over her shoulder.
When she's singing.
Yeah, when she's singing, she, you know, it's just fantastic. you know, so it was really good.
How did it do? Because, I mean, all films are judged on...
On money.
On two things, really.
I mean, the reviews were excellent.
Yes. I mean, it did quite well, didn't it?
It did very well.
During award ceremony season.
I mean, she got Renee got Best Actress at the Academy Awards.
I think she got the BAFTA as well.
You know, and many, many more. There's too many to list, basically.
Yeah.
The box office takings, this is worldwide, were 42.1 million.
So that's not... Again, that's not... Great.
No, but, it's not like.
I mean,
you know.
I know. You've got your bullet points there. I mean, did you ever find out what the budget was?
No, I couldn't find what the budget was on this.
It's a strange one, but I mean, I saw the film with you, and there's no big action sequences.
No.
There's no really expensive CGI. No. So money wise, it didn't look as. You're probably looking at, you know, including salary.
Mm.
It could have been done for 25, maybe even 30.
Mm.
So I imagine Renee Zellweger's salary would have been
quite high.
A substantial chunk.
Yeah, definitely.
Unless they came with some agreement with her, just calling back to Jack Nicholson.
Mm.
Because they had no idea how the first Batman film was going to be. Jack Nicholson's salary was a lot lower than he asked it to be.
Mm.
But they said, we'll give you a percentage of its takings.
Yeah, so...
So, okay, up front you might not get a lot or as much as you wanted. But you're constantly going to be earning from this film.
Of course.
And I wonder if they came...
Maybe Renee and the you know, it's... You know, but I just like the fact that this film had the flashbacks to when she was starting out. I mean, she had a horrible mother.
I mean, she was surrounded by monsters.
She was, really, because there was a pill to make her sleep, make her wake up, suppress her appetite, make her, you know, do whatever. There was always a pill. So I'm not surprised that she got addicted.
Yeah.
And the heartbreaking thing in this film as well, her children, her youngest children, Lorna... And Joey Luft, they get taken back with their father. She loses custody of them.
I mean, she's constantly just dragging them around doing, like...
She is. She's dragging them around to make, like...
Just penny ends shows, meet, isn't it?
You know? So, it's really, really heartbreaking in a way because this once big star is doing that, you know?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, she died the year later.
She did.
At the age of 47. So.
The timing of this film was spot on.
Oh, yeah.
When it was released. Yeah. Because it came hot on the heels of the terrible Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm. But I say it's a terrible film, but Rami Malek's performance as Freddie Mercury
It's very, very good. It's very brilliant. Good. And
then there's your favourite.
Rocket Man,
which charts Elton John.
Yeah.
So these musical biographies were on trend.
Mm.
And Judy, I think she was as easily as complex a character as those first two.
Of course, definitely. Maybe even more.
Maybe even more so. But it's interesting that they, all three of them, I mean, all three massive names in their own rights. And they all have that traumatic childhood.
Of course they do.
Which shaped, in some ways, very nearly shapes their downfall.
Well, yeah, it's sort of setting them up to fail kind of thing, in a way.
I mean, you could say that childhood created that talent that they had.
Yeah.
But in some ways, it was a destructive thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Or it attracted the wrong people, and very wrong people in Elton John's
case. Oh, yeah, definitely. I
mean, and definitely in Judy's
case. Well, yeah, because we see her marry her fifth husband in the film, you know. I mean, to you know, to have five husbands, you know, it's quite an achievement. But, you know, but yeah, I think she was just missing her children. And, you know, being... With everything going on, she just... Obviously, that's her way of coping.
I think the one thing that is impressive in the film, and you do see Junie make some mistakes.
Of course you do.
But, you know, like we said, at this point she's an addict. She's mm-hmm. probably got at least a couple of dependencies at this point
yeah.
that are well rooted now.
Yeah, definitely.
But you still see her wanting to try.
Yes, she's always trying, isn't she?
She hasn't got to the point where she's just shut away in her room and emptying one bottle after another. She's
no.
still trying.
And also,
she's fucking it up a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, but the thing is, she'll what she'll do is she'll have a really good run and then she'll have a bad day.
She'll
so
crash.
That she'll just crash. So in that way, it's like, you know, why couldn't she do that all the time? But there's a really nice scene in the film as well with the two gay fans.
Yes, I hope that happened.
Yeah, I think it actually did.
I really hope it happened.
And they are so fanatical about her.
They wait for her every night, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, at the stage door. They spent their savings on all these tickets.
Following her around.
Following her because they couldn't do it back in the early 60s or late 50s.
Yeah.
Because one was held up in prison for being gay.
Yeah.
So they're absolutely thrilled. And he tries to make Judy an omelette, and he puts in cream
yeah.
instead of whatever.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Well, I don't normally do that. What's going on?" It's just because they were so starstruck.
It is actually a really nice sequence.
It's a really nice little snippet.
Yeah.
And she actually kind of becomes herself. She doesn't.
I think so. Yeah.
She doesn't try and put on, you know, like, look at me, I'm Judy. You know, it's she's actually herself, and she kind of little opens up a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
You know.
It is. I'd actually forgotten that, and it yeah,
mm.
is a really nice.
It's just a really nice little touch.
It is. Out of the three that we've mentioned.
Yeah.
Which is your favourite?
Oh dear. It's really too close to call. It's more Rocket Man and Judy, which are my sort of two tops.
Yeah.
I think it's those two I've sort of drawn. I couldn't call it between those two. Bohemian Rhapsody, I did enjoy, but not as much as Rocket Man and Judy. Rocket Man purely because every little bit was a song, and I love that kind of thing.
And that's probably a good time to mention Rocket Man is almost half film, half musical, isn't it?
Yeah, it's I would say it was his musical of his life, basically, because
yeah.
you've got some really big hits in there.
Yeah, but like I said, you will get like traditional film sequences, and then it will go into almost a stage musical performance.
Yes, it does, yeah. But it's timed so perfectly
yeah.
as well. So it doesn't, like, you just don't randomly
it
burst into
yeah.
song. You lead into it.
It doesn't feel jarring
no.
at all in
I
that
mean,
change of pace.
Going back to Judy, I mean, Renee sang all the songs that she sang in the film.
Yes.
Herself.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's impressive in itself.
She is. And, like I said, who'd have thought Bridget Jones had that in her.
Exactly. But no, I think she did a really good job. I would recommend it. If you like a weepy film, because it's at the end, so that's it, I'm gone.
Yeah, because it's not until the end that we see her sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Yeah.
And it is quite.
And I won't spoil it for anybody, but it is the most stunning bit of the film.
It is. It's quite a bit.
And it's quite a moment as
yeah.
well.
Is there an artist you'd like to see next on the
Ooh,
big screen?
Oh, I don't know. Red Hot Chili Peppers would be quite interesting, wouldn't it?
You'd need more than one film.
Yeah.
That would be a Lord of the Rings-esque 12-hour trilogy, wouldn't it? With Chili Peppers.
It would be, but that would be quite interesting.
That would be
it could sort of cover like a few decades
it
in
would.
The film. I don't know.
I mean,
who
the
would
one,
you like to see?
Well, the one that was always talked about, and they always, as far as I can make out, just looked at it and said no, was David Bowie.
Yeah, because with David Bowie, you don't know which era to pick, really.
No, because, I mean, he looked different every time he stepped out of his front
exactly. door. Exactly. So, do you do Ziggy Stardust? Do you do, you know, whatever? And, you know, it's crazy.
It would be quite a filter. But, I mean, again, that would be a trilogy, wouldn't it?
It would be. You'd have to do three separate ones.
I don't know who else.
I don't know.
I mean, Boy George, I mean, he's had quite a life.
He's had, yeah, maybe Boy George. That would be quite interesting.
Well, I remember seeing an interview with Boy George, and he was saying in the early days of Culture Club, you'd get these sort of bigoted guys who'd wait for him outside the venue because they were going to beat up the gay guy. What they didn't realise was that Boy George is 6 foot plus and built like a tank.
Yes, exactly.
and was more than capable of dishing out a hiding on his own.
Exactly. So I don't know who I'd want to see next, really. I mean, there's so many artists I like, so anyone.
I mean, I think the other one that was mentioned was George Michael.
Yeah. Again, which that would be a while, wouldn't it? But I think it would probably take on the life of Rocket Man in a way, kind of going have like picking bits out of each decade,
and maybe in a similar fashion to Judy, in that you just chart the last days.
Yeah,
but
even it all calls the last back year to or,
it
get
calls
the
back to various bits and pieces.
Yeah,
there's. So many out there.
I know.
Kurt Cobain has always been talked about, but I don't think.
Yeah, see, because apparently there's a Bruce Springsteen film.
Okay.
Called Blinded by the Light. Yeah. So I think it's on streaming services now, actually. But I'm not really into Springsteen's music, so it's not a film that I really wanted to see.
I don't know who else.
I don't know.
There's so many.
There's so many. Kenny Rogers might be a good one.
Kenny Rogers. And Dolly Parton. Dolly Parton's
film. You have a bit of Dolly.
A film on her life. Oh, God.
So, yeah. You just take your fancy when
and
you see it.
Safe to say you do recommend.
Oh, yeah, I definitely do. Yeah. If you want something a little bit different, a little bit concentrated on one thing.
Yeah.
Then this is a really good film.
She did get the Oscar. And interestingly, Best Actor last year, or this year.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe it. We're only in April. This year's been...
Feels like it's been a million years this year.
This year's 10 years at least so far, and it's only April. Best Actor went to Joaquin Phoenix for Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've got two massively different films, but they both... stem from that childhood trauma.
That childhood trauma and
the mental
wellness
health
aspect, you know, is
quite an important message.
Oh, definitely.
And one that I think should have been in films a lot sooner.
Yeah, but see, mental health issues are
I think mental health awareness is probably decades behind where it should be.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And it's probably films like Judy. I know, I'll throw Rocket Man in there as well, because there is the aspects, the mental health aspects there. But definitely Joker.
Mm.
Hopefully these films bring awareness...
To the condition.
To the forefront a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, that what you see isn't necessarily what's going on.
Exactly. They need to delve a little deeper.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully we can get rid of this taboo.
Do you think... I mean, we only see a snippet of Judy's life in this film. Do you think there was a point she could have been saved?
Who knows? I really don't. I don't see where she could have been. If she hadn't been given the pills in the first place,
yeah.
Maybe this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Maybe she would maybe still alive now.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, addicts... by nature, are self-destructive.
Of course they are.
Yeah. Yes, she wanted to be famous again, but do you get the sense that she wanted to be more than just famous? She wanted to be clean again? She'd only ever really known a life of addiction, hadn't she?
Really, yes, because from her first film, The Wizard of Oz...
She was being pumped full of pills.
She was being pumped full of pills. So how did you think she would survive without it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
what she wanted in the end was to be with her children, have the money behind her to do it, and provide for them. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. I mean, did she know she was an addict? Because that was all she knew.
I think that's just all she knew, that it was okay to pop a pill.
Yeah.
Because you see her popping quite a few pills.
Yeah.
In the film, so, and drinking a lot, you know.
It is quite a sad story.
It is a very sad story, but I think, you know.
But well worth a watch. It's a definite good way of spending a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And, yeah, grab a box of tissues.
Yeah, maybe a tub of ice cream as
Tub of ice cream. It's a good tub of Haagen-Dazs. You're well on your way.
Or double-decker.
Double-decker ice cream.
Other brands are available.
Yeah. And your new favourite is cream egg ice cream, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Right, so my second choice is not a film. It's a series on Netflix. Before I go into this, I'll just say, Netflix are very good at this crime documentary.
They are.
They've had some cracking ones. I think it was last year there was a series called The Staircase.
Mm.
Earlier this year there was a series called The Pharmacist, both of which I would highly recommend. The one that got a lot of attention earlier this year was called Don't Fuck With Cats. Now, you started it, didn't you?
I started it, but then I couldn't finish it because it was really messing with my head.
Yeah.
And as we're animal lovers,
we're both
I really
huge
felt
animal
for those
lovers.
Cats, especially when I saw them in the vacuum bag.
But I'll just say, I can't stress enough, you should push past that. Because, yes, that's where the story starts, but it just goes boom.
Yeah.
It just goes everywhere from that point in.
Yeah, definitely.
This series, and it's been getting a lot of attention on social media, is The Tiger King.
Yes.
And I just want to say, right, I'm coming up to, well, I'm late 30s now. You know, I like to see, say I've been around a bit, I know the world kind of thing. Rubbish. Right? I don't know anything. Right, because you watch this series and you realise just how much you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There are some proper crazy people out
really?
There, and they are unchecked. They are running.
I think they should be checked.
They are running free. Okay. The three main characters that we meet are Joe Exotic.
Right. Sounds like a dodgy name.
He
anyway.
He sounds a porn name, isn't it? Complete with porn star mustache and mullet. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe is quite something.
Right. Okay. I might have to watch this.
It centres around three big cat reserve owners. Okay, so that, like I said, there's Joe. There is Joe's main rival, Carol Baskin, who, she's a little bit hippie-ish, but fairly normal, okay? And then there's my favourite name I've ever seen, is Bhagavan Antal.
It's an actual name.
That is his name. Thankfully, he's called Doc Antal.
Okay, no, that's
which,
fine. Makes life a little bit
it
easier.
It does make it a lot easier. Now, Doc Antal is probably the most switched on of the three.
Mm.
But that's not saying much. You've got, when you delve into this, you've got Joe, who hates Carol with a passion. Joe would make music videos, ripping the piss out of Carol, something chronic. He ran for president. He ran for governor. There was.
So he's done everything.
He's very. And there are a lot of other things that happen around that park that you just think this is too weird. Carol, like I said, is probably the most approachable of the three, but there's a story that both Joe is adamant it happened, and Doc Antal had heard the story, is that Carol had killed her first husband and fed him to the tigers.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and for the record, I think she did as well. Doc Antle, his reserve is seemingly normal, but then you realise it's basically a tiger-themed sex cult.
Oh my god!
Kind of thing.
Like swingers.
He's got a lot of the handlers there are female, who he is apparently married to. So he's got many wives. It's
oh dear.
It's very cultish when you
oh dear
when you look into it, and it just each episode just goes. It sort of tricks you.
What the fuck?
Yeah, basically, you it tricks you into thinking, well, this is as strange as things could possibly get.
Mm.
And then the episode goes, yeah, but what happened next was, and you sat there thinking, wow,
so okay. It's blowing your mind every
20 minutes, yeah. Mm. The supporting cast, I mean...
Well, there's a supporting cast as yeah, well.
And this shows you the caliber of lunatic that the first three are, when the supporting cast aren't like headliners. So you've got a former cocaine drug lord who's running a secret conservation facility. This guy was basically Scarface. Like, he's seen people chopped up with chainsaws and brought drugs in over the border in the middle of the night and gone fishing for them on boats and stuff. And yeah, this guy has led a life and been in prison for quite a lot of his life. You've got a chap called Jeff Lowe, who eventually goes into business with Joe Exotic. Jeff Lowe, when you first meet him, just seems like, you know, normal-ish guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a swinger.
Oh, God.
Jeff Lowe sneaks baby tigers and lions and stuff into hotel rooms, like posh hotel rooms, to attract girls into the room. So him and his wife and all these girls can have a massive...
Lovely.
...party.
Yeah. Orgy, basically.
Or, yeah, basically. There's a handler at Joe's reserve who's only got one arm.
Oh, okay,
It got bitten off by, I think it was the liger.
What's a liger?
It's a cross between a lion and a tiger.
Oh no, they haven't crossbred stuff.
Yeah, now that's Carol's main beef with Joe.
That
he's breeding animals. You kind of see Joe's point of view.
Mm.
That, you know, if no one's breeding these animals, they are going to go.
Of course.
But
why cross breed them?
They do happen in the wild.
Yeah.
Very rarely.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so his handler, she got her arm. I don't think it was bitten off at the time, but it was badly damaged.
Yeah.
And apparently they told her, look, you've got 6 months of physio, or we can just amputate it. And she went for the amputation.
Mm.
So there's another one of his handlers who's got no legs.
That's
just got my leg a bit funny. Yeah, just to tie into that, Becky and leg injuries and things on TV that involve legs, you're not great, are you?
No, not great at all.
Right, we're going to take a quick break and we will be back with you very shortly. So, we're back.
Yep.
And, yes, Tiger King.
Tiger King.
You haven't watched this yet, have you?
No, I haven't. So I might have to start watching this now because it looks quite interesting.
Interesting doesn't begin to cover it. It's... I promise I will... like a lot of people at the moment, Becky's having to work from home.
Yeah.
And I think that there'd be a risk of me coming home from work because I'm still allowed to go to work. That I'd come home and Becky would be like, I have seen things.
Yeah. Yeah.
I promise you, if you haven't seen it yet, it's only 8 episodes. Like I said, Netflix know what they're doing.
Yeah,
with this.
So it's not too long.
You're probably looking
at... You could do that in a day.
Easy. I mean, you're probably looking at 45 minutes, 50 minutes.
Oh, easily in a day. I'm the queen of the box sets.
Yeah, yeah. Well, 8 episodes, that's breakfast for you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, I would say definitely believe the hype. Okay, it's getting so much attention at the moment on social media. And for me, it's worth it.
Yeah.
You just, the bickering between Joe and Carol is only the beginning of it, okay? What happens after that, or what happens in the course of that, you don't see it coming. And like I said, every episode will make you go, what? That's like, how did we get from here to there? So, there we go.
Yeah.
Sort of end of our first episode. So, end of your first podcast.
Yes, it is. It's my first podcast.
Are you going to come back?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
Originally, I guess the plans for this podcast were once every 2 weeks, so that we could get 2 weeks worth of news and stuff. But I think at the moment, I mean, it's strange times.
Yeah, very strange.
For everyone, really. So I think we probably will be back on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of ideas for what I'd like to talk about in the next episode. I know you've got a couple already.
Yeah.
But until then, guys, wherever you are, we know it's a pain in the ass having to live under sort of restrictions, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I guess just listen to what your authorities are telling you. Unless you're in America, don't listen to a word Donald Trump says. And we're going to have to tough it out for a little bit longer, but we'll get there.
We will. We'll get there.
I think we'll get there. It's April now. I don't think... I mean, when did we start hearing about coronavirus?
Was it
November, December?
No, December last year, wasn't it?
I don't think anyone could have guessed just how much it was going to affect. I mean, like we said at the top of the show, even things like going to the shop are different, you know? We can't meet up with our friends, can't meet up with our family. And it's really, really strange times. So, you know, we're going to do our best to keep you entertained and give you ideas.
Yeah.
And because we're all over social media, so the Facebook group, on Instagram, on Twitter. If you've got any films that you'd like to suggest, you know, that we can give a mention, we might even cover them in more depth. You know, please feel free, send them in. Any feedback on the show, send it in. You know, this is a new show. I've podcasted before, but, you know, always happy to learn new bits and pieces.
Yeah, definitely.
Until the next time, guys.
Stay safe. Stay at home.
Stay at home. Yeah, wash your hands. Cause we weren't doing that before, apparently. When did washing your hands become so popular?
I know. Exactly. What were
people doing before the coronavirus? Yeah. Honestly. Thank you to Becky for joining me.
Thank you.
And yes, fingers crossed, we'll be with you next week. Take care, guys.
Take care. Bye.